I'm Dream Queen. You're in the cab with me. Thank you so much for rolling. Welcome, Travis.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you for being here again.
Just trying to hang out with the cool folks.
Ice, ice, baby. Oh, dang, that's bad. Reclaim it. It's hot in these streets. We do need some chilling out. I look at a little Queen Trash Mouse show yesterday. If anybody caught it, it was fire. And she was like, they're just words. She was like, inclusivity is a word. There's nothing wrong with that. Like, we should be inclusive. You know, talking about just how the division in the country, you know, how they try to turn us against each other using just words that we should all be accepting of, you know, in our society. But yeah. So, you know, summertime, you ain't gonna make me throw out the ice, man. It's too hot out here. But there's the other ice. The English language is a trick like that. You and I talked a bit about that, about 2 weeks ago when we were talking about patois?
Language is a trick for sure.
Yes.
I was thinking about the word resonate this morning because someone said that after listening to one of our shows, they resonated with a couple of things. And it's like the language of vibration itself. Like when someone says that they're resonating with you, it's like a harmonization. People living in harmony. That's a way of describing our mental image of how things should be. And it's vibration.
Yes.
But also with the crazy language stuff, if it didn't resonate with somebody, it wouldn't connect. So there's the strange paradox. Like learning that religion could be one of the scariest, potent tools used against the people, but to also find that there's bits and pieces inside that are almost priceless because, you know, people slip those things in there, those seeds of whatever resonates with you.
Yes. You know, it's, I mean, how much of what we, how we communicate is even words? You know, and that, I think that is part of the agenda of the English language to, that's so easy to have doublespeak because one word can mean three, four different things. And at the end of the day, it all comes down to the vibe. And before language, we've gotten here as a species millions of years and we've gotten along through a vibe. We didn't have language at the beginning. We didn't have words and, you know, we had touch, different sounds, you know, grunts, however we've evolved from.
Our eyes.
Our
the
eyes.
The windows to the soul.
Yeah.
Even language
pheromones and stuff. Sorry, go ahead.
You know, language specialists talk about how body language is 80% of communication. And so when I try to empathize with those that I see having a low vibration, I worry about how people look at them because we see each other through each other's eyes. Mirroring is that came up because it will be coming up here at the end of the book. But imagine how happy you are when you see someone light up to say hi. And the feeling you get from their eyes, their facial expression, it just feels bigger than them, like you're receiving light from a sun or something. And some people are looking for that light, but because of circumstance, being measured by their ocean, being measured by their phone, for, you know what I mean? They're having a hard time getting that true affirmation, like someone just lighting up to see them. And it's hard to imagine what that feels like when people say hi, but not in the same way. You know what I mean?
I do know what you mean. I do.
And so body language in that way is it's almost 100% of the communication because I can't even make myself light up to someone who I feel is in a dark space and needs to sit in it.
Yes, I found myself at the 4th of July cookout we had at the firehouse yesterday, the food distribution. You came through. I love that. And I'm giving the shout out to everybody who came through yesterday. I felt so elated. I felt so tired from doing some of the organizing up through the whole event because, you know, holding two spaces that this is the 4th of July, which a lot of people are not vibing right now. Folks were like, I'm staying home. I'm not, you know, and being on this different patriotic vibe, the vibe of elevating these United States, and showing up as an activist and an evolutionary to feed the people, to hold space for us, to be our authentic selves in this quirky little town. And I just became so overwhelmed that I feel like my eyes were showing out too much to people. It's like kind of shining too much. Cause you know, I've been on one for a couple of weeks since you've been here. Like, don't come in here with that positive. It's all over. But I found hope this week, and I found hope in making signs with my people, and I found hope in cooking with my people and for the people, and feeding for the people and watching people eat and just taking a load off and coming together to just find that moment. And, you know, the vibration, the resonance, and the shine was just really there. You know, driving in the parade, the homies had signs, and we made signs Thursday night, and there was talk amongst us, like, what if people get upset? Like, I'm like, it's my First Amendment right. Like, they can get upset. I get upset, right? What's going on? But I couldn't see what was going on in the bed of the truck, you know, in our makeshift float. I was driving in the front, but I'd see people standing on the street. I'd see them before they saw the homies in the back. So they'd be standing there looking like a little, you know, scrunch, you know, and then their faces would change and light up, and then their camera would come out and take pictures of the signs that we had, you know. And these signs, for those of you who weren't there, they were like, you know, stop ICE, you know, Viva LA Resistance, food is a human right, you know, stuff like that. And it was just beautiful. Like, folks were just like, I don't think anybody knew what to expect from the 4th of July parade, you know, in Madrid especially. But we all showed up, and yeah, it was like, and then it was like, hey, I felt so seen and loved. And I think other people by the side of the road that I know aren't for a fascist dictatorship, but still came out to represent for the town, because we have our gatherings here, and we're, you know, some of us, we just don't get to see each other so much. So people come out when they can, any excuse to come out. And I think they didn't know what to expect. And then they saw, we see each other holding each other, and it's like, yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
there's things to be proud of.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't always get the championship cup, but, you know, participation award's pretty good sometimes.
Yeah, participation award, yes. No, it's true. I did feel like, because I often don't participate in the protests around here. I don't know. I feel like, you know, I do. I just surviving, just coming out here and doing the bit that I do every day. I don't need to stand out there. But there was something very cathartic and healing about, like I said, art therapy of making these signs. We had like little Xerox copies of Jeff Bezos's face and the what was that guy's name? J.D. Vance, and you know, these other guys, and then with little guillotines around there and just the heads rolling, you know, a little X'd out eye. It was just cute, you know. And yeah, it's not gonna change them. It might upset them a little bit or not. I mean, but the act of creating that and just like scribbling it out on a piece of poster board, you know, it was just like, yeah, just get it out. Just like when you're a kid and it's like, don't cuss, but you go, you know, I don't know about you, but you go to your room and just write the cuss word on a piece of paper and then try to rip it up. Anyway, I don't know. Some kids might get that. Just a little art therapy, a little scream in the bubble.
Well, there's like so many different levels of you know, consciousness. So each time you experience someone on the other next level, it almost gives you like a permission to enter, you know, and then maybe the next time that person you saw that got so excited is standing next to you in the parade.
Yes.
Yeah. You never know. We don't ever see the fruit because it's too hard to concentrate on the fire. But there's a lot of fruit. I mean, I can't believe how blessed I am to be spinning on this rock with everybody that I've met. And I've learned more from my enemies than I've learned from my friends, if that makes any sense.
Say more.
Well, you want to get back into paradox all over again. It's like
that's talking your about bag, man.
How,
bring it.
How religion can have both seeds in it, you know, just the same way we do. Like when I explain to people like that, you know, I get parts of the manosphere that you don't because I am in it, you know. So I'm going to get the worst. I'm going to hear the worst. I'm going to see the worst. And it, there's a lot of talk about like, oh, we should have like a fight club and the thing to think, you know, about maybe we could get this anxiety out if we could just beat on each other for a minute. And there's some truth to that, without a doubt. Like that sometimes people hit each other in the male world and become friends somehow at the end of it. But that's not the dog I want to feed. And that's part of it. Like we have both ends, both sides in us. The older we get, the more we realize the reaction of what happens when you feed one side or the other. And physical violence is clearly on one side. You know, it doesn't, it's not appropriate. So why would we appropriate it? You know, and why not find another way to deal with anxiety, which this morning the thought was, you know, what is hellfire? It's got to be anxiety. The what people are describing when they try to describe hell, because hell's not in the Bible. There's the whole theory of Satan and the things, none of those things are in the scriptures. They're inside of us. They're what we do to ourselves. The anxiety, it's like fire is what it feels like, you know. Coming off of your skin is what it, your physical reaction to anxiety feels like. Burning, you can't stop. Torture, you know, tied up and lit on fire. And so I feel like instead of treating it as if it's, you know, something else, somewhere else, the way we treat a lot of things, we need to internalize that stuff and realize that there is no hell worse that we could imagine than what we do to ourselves when we're in interactions. Also, that's how we experience love and affection and empathy and all of the things, the dog that we want to feed, the things that we want our youth to grow up in. So, anyway, I'm talking way too much.
No, you're not. They love it. Travis, we love it. Well, speaking of language, should we read the piece for the people? All right, everybody. We're coming to the close, the farewell. We've been talking about the prophet for many, many moons. And for those of you who are just figuring out about the show, just joining us, go to In the Cab Radio at Linktree, and you can see all the places where you can find previous episodes. And you can also scroll down the bottom and see book club resources. And the public, the prophet is in public domain, so you can get a free copy of it. It also allows us to read the pieces in their entirety. And we've talked about the farewell a few times on this show, but we haven't read it to you. And so we're going to do that now. It's a little bit of a longer piece. It's the last chapter. Al-Mustafa Kellyanne told us was actually dying. And so, you know, you can kind of put that into your perspective. We just did the piece on death not too long ago. And this is what he has to say as he leaves the people of Orphalese. You got your pages there? Would you like me to open or you want to start? Rock. You want to go or you want me to go?
I'm going.
All right.
And now it was evening, and Almitra the seeress said, "Blessed be this day and this place and your spirit that has spoken." And he answered, "Was it I who spoke? Was I also not a listener? Then he descended the steps of the temple, and all the people followed him. And he reached his ship and stood upon the deck. And facing the people again, he raised his voice and said, "People of Orphalese, the wind bids me leave you. Less hasty am I than the wind, yet I must go. We wanderers, ever seeking the lonelier way, begin no day where we have ended another day, and no sunrise finds us where sunset left us. Even while the earth sleeps, we travel. We are seeds of the tenacious plant, and it is our ripeness and our fullness of heart that we are given to the wind and are scattered. Brief were my days among you, and briefer still the words I have spoken. But should my voice fade in your ears and my love vanish in your memory, then I will come again, and with a richer heart and lips more yielding to the spirit will I speak. Yea, I shall return with the tide, and though death may hide me, and the greater silence unfold me, yet again will I seek your understanding. And not in vain will I seek. If aught I have said is truth, the truth shall reveal itself in clearer words, and in words more kin to your thoughts. I go with the wind, people of Orphalese, but not down into emptiness. And if this day is not a fulfillment of your needs and my love, then let it be a promise till another day. Man's needs change, but not his love, nor his desire that his love should satisfy his needs. Know, therefore, that from the greater silence I shall return. The mist that drifts away at dawn, leaving but dew in the fields, shall rise and gather into a cloud, and then fall down in rain. And not unlike the mist have I been. In the stillness of the night I have walked in your streets, and my spirit has entered your houses, and your heart beats were in my heart, and your breath was upon my face, and I knew you all. I knew your joy and your pain, and in your sleep your dreams were my dreams, and often I was among you, a lake among mountains. I mirrored the summits in you and bending slopes, and even the passing flocks of your thoughts and your desires. And to my silence came the laughter of your children in streams, and the longing of your youths in rivers. And when they reached my depths, the streams and the rivers ceased not yet to sing. But sweeter still than laughter and greater than longing came to me. It was the boundlessness in you, the vast man in whom you are all but cells and sinews, he in whose chant all your singing is but a soundless throbbing. It is in the vast man that you are vast, and in beholding him I beheld you and loved you. For what distances can love reach that are not in that vast sphere? What visions, what expectations, what presumptions can outsoar that flight? Like a giant oak covered with apple blossoms is the vast man in you. His might binds you to the earth, his fragrance lifts you into the space, and in his durability you are deathless. You have been told, even like a chain, you are weak as your weakest link. This is but half the truth. You are also strong as your strongest link. To measure you by your smallest deed is to reckon the power of the ocean by the frailty of its foam. To judge you by your failures is to cast blame upon the seasons for their inconstancy. Aye, you are like an ocean, and though heavy grounded ships await the tide upon your shores, yet, even like an ocean, you cannot hasten your tides. And like the seasons, you are also, and though in your winter you deny your spring, yet spring, reposing within you, smiles in her drowsiness and is not offended. Think not I say these things in order that you may say the one to the other, "He praised us well, he saw but good in us." I only speak to you in words of that which you yourselves know in thought. And what is word knowledge but a shadow of wordless knowledge? Your thoughts and my words are waves from a sealed memory that keeps records of our yesterdays. and of the ancient days when the earth knew not us nor herself, and of nights when earth was upwrought with confusion. Wise men have come to you to give you up their wisdom. I came to take of your wisdom, and behold, I have found that which is greater than wisdom. It is a flame spirit in you, ever gathering more of itself. While you, heedless of its expansion, bewail the withering of your days. It is life in quest of life in bodies that fear the grave. There are no graves here. These mountains and plains are a cradle and a stepping stone. Whenever you pass by the field where you have laid your ancestors, look well thereupon, and you shall see yourselves and your children dancing hand in hand. Verily, you often make merry without knowing. Others have come to you whom, for golden promises made unto your faith, you have given but riches and power and glory. Less than a promise have I given, and yet more generous have you been to me. You have given me deeper thirsting after life. Surely there is no greater gift to a man than that which turns all his aims into parching lips and all life into a fountain. And in this lies my honor and my reward, that therefore I come to the fountain to drink. I find the living water itself thirsty, and it drinks me while I drink it. Some of you have deemed me proud and overshy to receive gifts. Too proud indeed am I to receive wages, but not gifts. And though I have eaten berries among the hills when you would have had me sit at your board, I slept at the portico of the temple when you would gladly have sheltered me. Yet was it not your loving mindfulness of my days and my nights that made food sweet to my mouth and girdled my sleep with visions? For this I bless you most. You give much, and know not that you give it all. Verily, the kindness that gazes upon itself in a mirror turns to stone, and a good deed that calls itself by tender names becomes the parent to a curse. And some of you have called me aloof, drunk with my own aloneness. And you have said, he holds counsel with the trees of the forest, but not with men. He sits alone on the hilltops and looks down upon our city. True it is that I have climbed the hills and walked the remote places. How could I have seen you save from a great height or a great distance? How can one be indeed near unless he be far? And others among you call unto me not in words, and they say, Stranger, stranger, lover of the unreachable heights, why dwell you amongst the summits where eagles build their nest? Why seek you the unattainable? What storms would you trap in your net? What vaporous birds do you hunt in the sky? Come and be one with us. Descend and appease your hunger with our bread and quench your thirst with our wine. In the solitude of their souls they said these things, but were their solitude deeper, they would have known that I sought but the secret of your joy and your pain. And I hunted only your larger selves that walk the sky. But the hunter was also the hunted. For many of my arrows left my bow only to seek my own breast. And the flyer was also the creeper. For when my wings were spread unto the sun, their shadow upon the earth was a turtle. And I, the believer, was also the doubter. For often have I put my finger in my own wound that I might have the greater belief in you and the greater knowledge of you. And it is this belief and this knowledge that I say, you are not enclosed within your bodies, nor confined to houses or fields. That which is you dwells above the mountain and roves with the wind. It is not a thing that crawls into the sun for warmth or digs holes into darkness for safety, but a thing free, a spirit that envelops the earth and moves in the ether. If these be vague words, then seek not to clear them. vague and nebulous is the beginning of all things, but not their end. And I fain would have you remember me as a beginning. Life and all of its lives is conceived in the mist and not in the crystal. And who knows but a crystal is mist in decay.
This would I have you remember in remembering me. That which seems most feeble and bewildered in you is the strongest and most determined. Is it not your breath that has erected and hardened the structure of your bones? And is it not a dream which none of you remember having dreamt that builded your city and fashioned all there is in it? Could you but see the tides of that breath, you would cease to see all else. And if you could hear the whispering of the dream, you would hear no other sound. But you do not see, nor do you hear, and it is well. The veil that clouds your eyes shall be lifted by the hands that wove it, and the clay that fills your ears shall be pierced by those fingers that kneaded it, and you shall see, and you shall hear. Yet you shall not deplore having known blindness, nor regret having been deaf. For in that day you shall know the hidden purposes in all things, and you shall bless darkness as you would bless light. After saying these things, he looked about him, and he saw the pilot of his ship standing by the helm and gazing now at the full sails and now at the distance. And he said, "Patient, overpatient, is the captain of my ship. The wind blows, and restless are the sails. Even the rudder begs direction. Yet quietly my captain awaits my silence. And these my mariners, who have heard the choir of the greater sea, they too have heard me patiently. Now they shall wait no longer. I am ready. The stream has reached the sea, and once more the great mother holds her son against her breast. Fare you well, people of Orphalese. This day has ended. It is closing upon us, even as the water lily upon its own tomorrow. What was given us here we shall keep. And if it suffices not, then again must we come together and together stretch our hands unto the giver. Forget not that I shall come back to you. A little while and my longing shall gather dust and foam for another body. A little while, a moment of rest upon the wind, and another woman shall bear me. Farewell to you and the youth I have spent with you. It was but yesterday we met in a dream. You have sung to me in my aloneness, and I, of your longings, have built a tower in the sky. But now our sleep has fled, and our dream is over, and it is no longer dawn. The noontide is upon us, and our half-waking has turned to fuller day, and we must part. If in the twilight of memory we should meet once more, we shall speak again together, and you shall sing to me a deeper song. And if our hands should meet in another dream, we shall build another tower in the sky." So saying, he made a signal to the seamen, and straightway they weighed anchor and cast the ship loose from its moorings, and they moved eastward. And a cry came from the people as from a single heart, and it rose into the dusk and was carried out over the sea like a great trumpeting. Only Almitra was silent, gazing after the ship until it had vanished into the mist. And when all the people were dispersed, she still stood alone upon the seawall. Remembering, oh Jesus.
Stop it. Remembering in her heart his saying, a little while, a moment of rest upon the wind, and another woman shall bear me.
We left the tissues out, bro. Doggone it. Like, you got halfway through. I was like, I didn't bring the tissues. Mm-hmm.
Crap. Yeah, that resonated.
Oh. It burns my eyes.
It hurts my heart.
I know my heart is just... You know? Thank you. Thank you for sharing these moments. Thank you to the audience. Thank you to Khalil Gibran and Alfred A. Knopf, who had no idea that this book was going to go like this. I think if y'all go back to when we began this book, I did a very brief synopsis of the history of it and the publishing of it. And you can go to khalilgibran.com, where the keepers of the Khalil Gibran archives, there's some articles there about this book. And Alfred Knopf thought it wasn't going to sell anything. And he thought that it was kind of, you know, some spiritualist woo-woo dribble. And it turned into being one of the most published books in history. And I've said often on this show, as is recorded by a Khalil Gibran scholar on that website, all of the places that this book has been found and requested. And Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, where we have kept, it's one of our places where we keep political prisoners and alleged terrorists in very, very bad conditions. Atrocities were reported and recorded that our soldiers have committed to people in Guantanamo Bay, so much so that it was closed down. This book was requested by prisoners there. And I began to feel like an overwhelm of emotion when we got to the places where he was talking about the blindness that people experience in our existence. The part where he's like, come and be one of us, you know, and descend and appease your hunger with our bread and quench your thirst with our wine. In the solitude of their souls, they say these things. In the solitude of their souls, they say these things. The solitude of their souls. And we talk a lot about in capitalism, the harm that individualism can do. It separates us one from the other's experience, from compassion. Mm-hmm. And, but were their solitude deeper, they would have known that I sought but the secret of your joy and your pain. You know, it's just that seeking of compassion, of how am I like you? Where's the root of these feelings? And then it goes on a little bit to say, you are not enclosed within your bodies, nor confined to houses or fields. That which is you dwells above the mountain and roves with the wind. But a thing free, a spirit that envelops the earth and moves in the ether. It's so hard to really want to tell people that this is not it. Death is not the end. And I bring to the front the people who it have to exist in these concentration camps, who are taken out and abused and imprisoned. At some point, we have to release this mortal coil, even as we exist within it, and accept that there is more than the cruelty of man. There is more than even the beauty that we experience on this plane, that we exist beyond this, and therefore we can accept our fate. You know?
We almost believe it when we see genuine smiles from another person. We were just talking about this before. I feel like it's that little bit of hope. It's that larger feeling. You know, it's like when people talk about auras, it's something outside of the confines of your skin. I'm revisiting a book right now that talks about the underlying story of humanity is that we've always felt like we can't find the bars of our own cage. And, you know, we have defined ourselves by words and by this certain system of work where you need to go and do a certain amount of things so that food comes out the slot and the roof is over the head and all of the expectations that you may be assuming of yourself from other people are being met. And where are the bars? We're making them constantly, taking them around with us. Like we were saying, when you think about what's wrong, it's because you've got history backing up the fact that some of these things have been tried a bunch of times and never worked. Like the wall. You know, why are we revisiting constructing walls? Just to keep the delusion that people on the other side have some kind of a difference between us and them is crazy. Yeah.
I mean, I ask myself this all the time. Why are we still doing this? You know, do we have to do this again?
Is it because manifestation takes so long and we are just continually impatient?
Is it because lizard people from outer space?
Because the paradox.
Who are not made of the same stuff?
The paradox of life situation, slowing things down to keep it at a certain pace. Like we touched on love language right at the end of the last time we talked. I mean, we all have a very strong feeling about the word love culturally everywhere across the planet. And so we need to have a discussion about how words and love language actually work because they can be used as manipulation and all of the worst things too. Control. I'm doing this to you because of how much I love you. I can't let you do it because I love you. And all these are moments where our authentic self can get snuffed out. You know?
Yeah. I watched a thing on Instagram the other day, and it was a person trying to bring his parents around away from MAGA. And he's, you know, there was, I guess, a Zoom recording live. You could see them all talking. And at one point, his dad was like, because my vision is the best vision for this country. What I believe is the right thing. And I often think about the surety in myself where I feel like, no, my vision is the right thing because my vision doesn't include destruction of a people. Love is sustainable because it is life. And in the last hour, I touched a little bit on genocide and why oppressors seek genocide, because if you leave survivors, you're always going to be in a perpetual battle. That's the thing about violence, is it's perpetual. So they think, I'm going to kill all these people down to the last one, because they know deep down inside, even if that last one survives, life will carry on. They can't get us all, y'all. And that's why we shall maintain hope. I think this poem, another reason why I got all misty, was the vibration of hope. The hinting at reincarnation, I felt the ancestors coming through here. When he talked about meeting again, it was, but yesterday we met in a dream. I don't know. Say something. Let me just stop here. I don't know.
I got misty when he started talking about his description of seeing people from, you know, walking around in the dark, hiking up in the hills, that's something that relates to me because those are two things that I do quite often.
Yes,
that was so cute. And I can't tell you how much I feel everyone out here when I'm doing that. Like from up on top of the hill, not everybody can make it up there. It's steep, you know, and there's definitely snakes up there right now. But to see it from a distance is almost like the only way to see it when you're in that moment, because this town is larger than life. Why do you think people are driving out here to take pictures of it? There's something vibrating at a high level, and it's, you know, it's not any one thing. It's all of the bits together are making a harmony, and people are trying to capture it on their iPhones, or, and then they go and they tell the story, and every time they tell the story, we become cooler without doing anything. You know, the fish keeps getting bigger. All of a sudden, these people are just like living the life when it's not even close to that. You know what I mean? But it's a manifestation. And if they can hold on to that long enough for the material world to catch up, then we're all going to get there. We're the tenacious plant.
I know you love all that plants and seeds and trees. You know, yes, it's true. You can't get it in the phone. You just can't.
Right. That's why all of us have like hundreds of sunset pictures.
Yeah.
We don't go back and look at it because if you look at it, you're like, oh, didn't get it.
No, can't get it. Sometimes I just delete it immediately. I just wanted to find these lines. That's why I'm listening to you, but looking at these pages, because it's just, there's so much in this last piece, you know? I think it's the, if in the twilight of memory we should meet once more, we shall speak again together, and you shall sing to me a deeper song. And if our hands should meet in another dream, we shall build another tower in the sky. Yeah. You ever felt like you know people in a past life, or you ever have these resonances of like, this is not the first time that I've known this person? That part struck me deeply because I feel that some people call it finding your tribe. Or what's your idea about the in 1 minute or less? What's your takeaway for the eternal nature of the soul?
Vibration.
Yeah,
I think vibration can be very familiar because if something is resonating with you, it could be parts of the past, other people that it reminds you of, something that you found lovely and wanted to emulate in your own life. Somehow make that sound, make that vibration into a harmony.
I think that's a really great way to put that. Sometimes I feel like, yeah, we say past lives, but it's just another incarnation. And incarnations can be different things. Like this paper is an incarnation of a tree, you know. And so to say I reach back to a time or whatever, everything is just sort of laid on top of each other. And in this, what I can see or hear is not necessarily the same as what I feel in time. And maybe to take time off the table. Thanks to everybody who's been here with us through the Prophet Journey. Go ahead to In the Cab Radio at Linktree, In the Cab Radio on Mixcloud, In the Cab Radio on YouTube, In the Cab Radio wherever you get your podcasts, and you can get past episodes of the show, and you can find links to the book. KhalilGibran.com will take you right there. Please check out some of the essays that are about this book and about the man. You want to say anything before I get us out of here?
Deep breathing. Breathe deep. Love deeply. Smile with everything you got, because it probably says more than anything else.
Yes, yes, y'all. Breathe deeply. Keep your head in the clouds and your feet on the ground. Dream. Neptune's gone retrograde again, y'all. This is our chance to dream another dream for us all. It's possible. We're here. Love you. In the Cab Radio is produced by Jada White, aka Dream Queen. Original theme music produced by Baby Weekend Boys and Icky Mac the Beat Jugular. Learn more at In the Cab Radio at Linktree. Thank you so much for tuning in.